moment for me that she can, at this age, come right back to that. And so you're right. We were able to constantly go back and forth between the archival pieces we had to the present day. We were lucky enough to interview her about three times, three different settings before she passed. So we had a lot of material to work with.
And it was a large body of work. And I remember when I first asked her, would she do a documentary? She gave me a look of, do you know what you're asking? And I didn't quite know. But once she agreed to it, she was very helpful. And I remember once she called us up and she said, how's it coming? You know, I'm not getting any younger. And so she was very aware. But we also had to be aware that we were taking her back. She had done the books and she could now just live her life. And we were asking her to come back and relive it again for us. And she did that, to the extent that she relived every scene. And I think it was cathartic for her. I really think it was good for her.
And what do you think Dr. Maya Angelou's life tells us about American history, race, and racism?
It is really, she would often quote James Baldwin, we're in these yet-to-be United States. And that's still a fact. We're in these yet-to-be United States. Racism is alive and well. We must not be defeated by it, but we must protest and we must be a part of getting rid of it to the extent that we can. And so I think that she would be happy with the fact that we pulled this together in her honor, but we're still saying the same things. You must not be defeated by this, but you must fight it.
And finally, Colin, what you learned from this woman who you shared with the world?
I'm not going to spend an hour telling you everything I've learned. What I will say is that she brought me to this moment. And she would tell me that I'm the hand at the small of your back. I may let you stumble, but I will never let you fall. She has played a third parent role in my life, my entire life. And, the sense of pride and the ability to walk out of the door knowing that I have this woman in my corner has allowed me to do many things. And I'm just so appreciative of Bob and Rita here to have put such heart into this project and to really care about it and to really nurture it to its completion. And I'm proud to be sitting next to them, and I'm proud of this documentary. It's the first of my grandmother's life, and it's just an amazing step forward for people to learn about her.
Colin Johnson, the grandson of Dr. Maya Angelou, along with Bob Hercules and Rita Coburn-Wack, co-directors of the new film Maya Angelou and Still I Rise. I spoke to them at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Happy birthday to our archivist, Brendan Allen. Democracy Now! Has several job openings. We're hiring a broadcast engineer, as well as a director of finance and operations, and a director of development. You can go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Chirina Nadura, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to John Hamilton and Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, which, of course, can only mean one thing. It is time for Off the Wall.
OBB, Kyle? What's OBB?
It's the Austrian train firm, like the large firm that handles a lot of the Austrian regional and local rail and stuff.
I was about to hit the train. I think he just did, actually. So, over there, that would be track 2. There's a train that's going, I don't know where it's going, but there's another track coming in that right now on track 4. And I can tell you this one is going to Linz at 12:39, which is in exactly 3 minutes from now. It's only 3 cars long, and that's an OBB train too. We're at the train station in Salzburg in Austria.
Salzburg Hauptbahnhof.
That's right. I don't think they have a different train station. They might. I don't know. There's so many trains in this part of the world. But okay, so that train over there on track 2 is leaving. It's being pulled by that locomotive. I don't think there's any passengers. There's only 2 cars, and that's a weird-looking locomotive. I think
that's like a work train. It's something for like the yard and local, you know, in the facility here, not something that would go distances.
Well, it reminds me of the train we saw in Dresden, where we just saw a locomotive pulling and pushing 2 cars over and over again from our hostel window, because we had a view of the whole train station. So maybe that's what they're doing. Is she saying something of relevance? Probably not.
She's talking about the Westbahn and Westbahnhof, which is actually really interesting because that's how we got here.
That's true.
For this particular part of the journey. And we're getting ready for another part of the journey that's, it's going to be a little bit different.
I'm sorry if I sound a little out of it, but I got sick again. I don't know how. I think I got mountain fever or something because in Salzburg we're kind of elevated a little bit. It's mountainous. It's not really the big city like Vienna was. But we are at the train station now in Salzburg preparing to head back into Germany. Today's going to be a real whirlwind of connections. Let me just tell you what we have lined up. This ticket, which, by the way, I was able to buy this ticket online, but then there was the challenge of printing it out, which we were able to solve thanks to our friends here in Salzburg who very graciously printed it for us. But on that particular ticket, you're able to know a lot of things about your connections. Today we're going on, I guess, about 3 hours on the train, but it's actually going to be 3 trains. We're taking a train from Salzburg, HBF, Hauptbahnhof here, and that will be leaving from track 5. Actually, track 5, C through F, because the platform here is so long that you can fit 2 trains on every platform. So there's actually a train already on platform 5 down by A and B, but that's not our train. Our train will be coming on track C through F. And we'll be on that train for a grand total of 7 minutes. And it's amazing the information that they give you on the ticket, because they tell us that we're arriving in a place called Freilassing. Freilassing? Is that how you pronounce that?
Freising.
Yeah, I like the way you say it better. It tells us also that we'll be arriving on track 4 in that city, and that 3 minutes later, we are supposed to be on a train leaving from track 5. And they have the train number and everything. That leaves at 13:23, 23 minutes after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that train goes to Landshut Bay Hauptbahnhof, arriving at 15:21, 21 minutes past 3 p.m. on track 1. 10 minutes later, we're supposed to be on a train that leaves off of track 5 on its way to Regensburg Hauptbahnhof, arriving at 4:11, 16:11. And at that point, that's when we get our rental car and drive across Germany on our way, sort of our way home, because we have a couple of things to do in Germany. But then we're going to fly out of Brussels in Belgium. But all this detail on a ticket, you know, it's incredible to me. They can tell you the track number days in advance because it's a system. It's always the same track number. So they can tell you this train will be on this track at that time, and it is. It leaves on the minute. It's something that we've just noticed everywhere we've been, that they just are very serious about time, very serious about trains being where they're supposed to be.
I think it's interesting. I did want to know about being under the weather. This is the coldest place we've been so far. And in fact, today is one of the coldest days we've experienced, I think.
Yeah, -5 Celsius, which really isn't that cold for winter. I thought this winter would be a lot colder. It's late January, and we've been in Europe now for almost a month, and we really haven't seen any snow. We've been in Hamburg. We made our way down through Dresden, into Prague, Bratislava, Budapest, and I've lost track, Vienna. Did I leave anything out? No, I don't think I did. We've passed through a bunch of places, but we haven't really seen any... is that Star Train? Oh, this might be our train.
That's a bizarre train.
Well, yeah, 79015. Our train is 79030, but it may change numbers because it's arriving now, and when it heads back the other way, it might be it might change. Actually, you know, that train went past... It went past E, F, and G, maybe they can fit 3 trains on these platforms.
It does say Friesland or Freilassing.
Okay, so it probably goes back and forth between these two places.
Maybe they move it up or separate it or otherwise line it up with this. I don't know.
Well, the amazing thing is that the train is here. It probably is here. We're at the platform. We know what platform we're going to be at. We'll get on that train... And we know what platform it'll be arriving on. We know what platform we have to be on. So the fact that we have 3 minutes to get on a different train is not a concern. We know it's going to work.
Well, I think this brings up something we notice and something we'll probably talk about a little bit more is automating and things that are predictable. We saw this a lot at the Miniature Wonderland and also at the port in Hamburg. This concept of making things that are able to be, well, they're predictable. You know, those are the things that should be robotic. Those are the things that should be automated or semi-automated. And I think that's going to become important in the future is automating the right things. Not everything should be robotic. Definitely not your friends. And so on. But I think that these things are predictable, and if you have infrastructure that works, you're not worried about the rails, you're not worried about a fire with the electrical system or something. When you invest in that stuff, the fact that it's going to consistently be a set of rails all the way there and that the trains are going to function the entire way, you can start doing creative things, or at least be very organized and be free to be creative, because those things you can rely on, and that starts with time and timing, but it goes to infrastructure and it goes to transportation and the things that people really do depend on. And there's just so much work we could do, and we learn so much.
We say this a lot. It seems to be a theme I'm always coming back to. And this train has just changed its destination, by the way. Now it says München Hauptbahnhof is where it's going, which is where the train we're supposed to be on is going. So we could get on this train half an hour before it leaves, or we could kind of hang out here in the station. It's up to us. But we always seem to come back to this point of accuracy and time, speed, things like that. Now, everywhere you go in this particular part of the world, you see clocks that are accurate. You see 24-hour time format. You turn on a television station, and you'll see. It'll tell you what time it is to the second. If you listen to the radio, and almost invariably on the hour, you'll hear beeps indicating when the time has struck the hour. The trains leave exactly when they're supposed to. They arrive when they're supposed to. There are exceptions, of course.
It's this deep synchronicity. Is that a word?
Yeah, I think it is. It was a Police album, too, I think.
Awesome. Well, and that's really the crux of it, I think. And I don't know if we need to get better at it or if we should just... I think mostly we should care about it more.
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm sure we can get better at it. But for some reason, we don't seem to care about it. We don't seem to care that, oh, it's, you know, 5 minutes past when this train was supposed to leave and it still hasn't left for no particular reason.
And that's normal.
That's normal, and we accept that. Or, you know, what time is it? There's no clock around. In these areas, you want to know what time it is. You can pretty much find out almost instantly because it's usually a clock and it's almost always correct. So I don't know why it's not important to us. it doesn't add to the pressure. It just makes things more efficient. You know you're going to get someplace at a certain time. And, you know, traveling in countries where you don't know the language, that's essential to be able to know that. We arrive in various cities, and we quickly learn the metro system. But in that metro or on that bus or on that tram, you'll see inside, no matter how old the tram or bus is, you will see a digital display saying what the next station is, what time it is, what connections you can get at that particular station. Sometimes you'll even see what time those connections will arrive at that station. It's incredible what they're able to do. But it's not that they're more intelligent, that they can figure this stuff out. It's just that they put emphasis on that and make that important. I think we should, too, because we'd be able to get places faster and more conveniently, more efficiently.
We'd be more approachable, too, I think, to visitors because maybe they're not as familiar with the system. They're not as familiar with the language. And those are the strategies. Those are the things that, you know, time and an understanding of a map or a schedule, that's crucial to someone who's unfamiliar with the town. They don't know that in Albuquerque you have to wait for the Greyhound, you know, an extra half hour to get to another part of New Mexico or whatever it is.
It should be easier for us because we have less trains, you know, that have to be synchronized and coordinated. Here they have so many trains. By the way, on the track I'm sitting next to, which is track 4, there is a train to Budapest that will be leaving at 13:08, which is before our train leaves. So that means it'll be arriving fairly soon. And I can see it's going by way of Vienna, Westbahnhof, and it's, I guess it'll be arriving pretty soon, and you know it's going to leave on time, 13:08. But with less trains to worry about, I don't understand why we can't say, okay, this particular train is always going to be on this particular track at this particular time. And that's a train arriving on track 6.
From Vienna.
It's from Vienna. Well, welcome to Salzburg, everybody, from Vienna. And it looks like the engine has just disconnected from the overhead wire. Oh, look at all those pigeons up there on the overhead wire. Wow.
So,
and look, this guy's, he's disconnecting the engine from the train manually.
He's got a hole in his pants.
That's what you notice. He's down there on the track separating a locomotive from a passenger train. And shouting to somebody to do something.
They're going to start up the engine because they're not on electric now.
So what is the engine going to run on?
I think they may have, like, diesel, so it's like a mixed engine that can do both electric and diesel.
Okay,
oh, no, wait, here we go.
It's raising up again. It's going to touch the electric wire.
I thought it was going to make a big sound.
Well, the pigeons flew when it touched, so maybe they know something. And now I guess this engine will be separating. I guess because it has to move to the front to bring it back to Vienna, if that's where this train is going afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing that is there's a lot of peer pressure. One thing about this system and the way it works, the fact that it's running on time, is you have to connect certain countries. So if you have one country sloughing, right, if they're not pulling their weight, Germany's going to be like, what the heck, you know? And, well, they'll be like that anyway, but, you know, Austria can't let France down if they're connecting from here and there and the other place. So you have all these nations who basically, if they don't pull their weight, literally, if they don't do a good job, it's going to disrupt other nations and other forms of transport. I don't think we have the pressure as much. And then we make these jokes like, you know, there's Hawaii time, you know, and Mexican time. I don't know. I mean, Seattle time, you know, we laugh that, oh, we're laid back, or these are certain types of people out in Vermont or in Jersey. I don't even know anything about these places. But the point is, those places, if we did this, if we had a bit of a mental exercise, we could treat it in the same way, where states had rail, and it was a state rail system. And there is starts of that.
Interesting. There's another train to München, or Munich, as we say, arriving on track 3 right now, that I think is leaving before our train. It's a rail jet, which is run by OBB. That's a high-speed train. And our train is kind of a tiny train. But they're both going to Munich. And actually, this train pulling in right now is a double train. There's a locomotive in the middle of it. It's huge. This train must be about 20 cars long. So I'm not sure where it came from. It probably came from someplace pretty far away. And it's leaving before our train, and it'll certainly get to Munich before our train does. Our train is only 3 cars long. But just, it gives you an idea of how varied the traffic is coming through a station like this. And this isn't even that big a station. There's about a dozen tracks, but it's typical for a European city. You go to a Hauptbahnhof, a main station in a major city, and it'll just blow you away, the amount of traffic that is happening. But to get back to the point I was making before, you know, take Penn Station, for instance, where people have to stand and watch the board to see what track their train, the one they take every day, is going to be on today. And maybe somebody could explain this to me. What exactly prevents us from saying the 432 is always going to be on track 13? And what's happening now? Well, a freight train is coming through on a track that does not have a platform, but it's pulling all these cars. Look at that.
Yeah.
What kind of cars are those?
I can't tell.
How many cars? It's endless. It just goes on forever and ever.
I think they're
all these cars.
They're V-dubs. V-dub Caddy, which is like a work vehicle, and then a V-dub Golfs, GTIs and stuff.
Wow. I noticed also the locomotive in the middle of the train that just arrived from Munich has turned on its headlight. So that will probably be separating from the train that just arrived and possibly heading someplace else. So that happens too sometimes. You'll get on a train and half of that train will go to one place and half will go to another, and it'll separate, and it'll be pretty seamless too. And the opposite happens as well. When you're traveling, another train will latch on to your train, and you'll all arrive in the same place at the same time, which is kind of cool.
You're talking about the waiting and the antiquated board system for regional stuff in Penn Station and that whole concept of waiting around. And it's absolutely, you know, part of things we're just used to with this. And we can't fathom other ways of it working. And the truth is, it can work other ways. And this is, I mean, I think have...
That's a nice noise, isn't it? I don't know what that's all about. We don't have that noise back home, do we?
That is the sound of progress.
Well, that's the sound of somebody with a misconfigured PA system, I guess. But as the cars continue... Wow, this cars just go on forever. Okay, there's an end, finally. But easily, a few hundred cars just passed us, a few hundred automobiles on train cars being pulled through the station. It's kind of cool how freight trains and passenger trains just kind of pass by the station at the same time. It gives you a sense to how much happens by rail. But back to the point you were making.
Having a national rail system, I think, was a bit of a mistake. I think we need to look at our rail system as pieces and components, and that's similar to the way it works here. You have companies and systems in each part of the European Union working and doing their best nationally. And I think if we think of our states as nations in the context of the conversation, you could put together something really good. There's regional systems, regional transit starting in different places, but they're not integrated on the state level, you know, crossing states and stuff like that. And I think our national system, it's too small. And if we were to build it out, we should start very much like the premise United States governmentally goes. I mean, we should manage and control it on the state level. Imagine Vermont is you know, in time and doing their system the same way that Kentucky is, but with their own unique system and their own unique flair. And you know, New Mexico Rail does this. I mean,
well, those three states you mentioned, I don't know if any of them even have trains. I should know this, but I don't. Vermont, Kentucky, New Mexico, do they have trains?
That's the problem. We should all have some kind of, and I think, you know, light rail is a step, but growing those systems and having much more substantial regional options by rail is just brilliant. I mean, we noted this in some of our previous conversations on the trip, that Germany loves cars, but they also have a lot of trains. Right. And that integration, that synchronizing helps the economy, helps the union itself, and helps the individual countries and states
and
involved.
We can't even integrate within a state in our country. For instance, if I want to go from, say, Stony Brook to White Plains, I'm staying within the state. I'm even using the same transit system. It's all owned and operated by MTA. But one is Long Island Railroad and one is Metro North. One goes through Penn Station, one goes through Grand Central. There's no connection between those two except by subway. And you can't buy a ticket from one to the other. You have to go to one station, then get to the other station, then buy a ticket. It's really silly. And even when they have what's known as East Side Access, where Long Island Railroad goes into Grand Central, I don't think you'll be able to buy a ticket straight through. But that is easy here. We bought a ticket to different countries. And the trains we're taking today, by the way, we didn't make reservations on. Reservations give you an actual assigned seat. And these trains are very local trains, so we're not getting that. But if we did make reservations on, say, a high-speed line, we would have our seat numbers. And to be able to tell someone what their seat number is in a different country, that's pretty cool. That's beyond anything we can do. And by the way, the train to Munich is leaving now, but only half the train is leaving. The other half is remaining on the track, I guess, track 3C, 3A through C. And I don't know where that's too far away for me to actually read where it's going. But that train arrived with another train, and half of it just left. And we're expecting the train to Budapest to arrive any moment now on track 4. So that'll be kind of cool. Our train, by the way, on track 5, has turned on its light, its headlight, and there's an engineer in the cab now. And the destination is also Munich. But that train doesn't leave for another 20 minutes or so. So we're quite content sitting here on the bench on the platform, and then we'll just make our way over to that for the 7-minute train ride that we have, and then a 3-minute connection to another train in a place we've never been before. Are we panicking? We are not panicking.
I will note that the sign is saying from A, B, instead of what we thought was C, D. So I think he's going to remain there.
Okay. They can, I guess, change the letters within the track. But that is most certainly our train, because we know where the final stop is. And we also have 20 minutes, so not a problem. We make connections sometimes with a minute to spare. And things are very punctual.
I think it's indicating from A, B, back. So A, B, so from B, the end of B, that would be C through almost D and E.
We had an adventure coming here, speaking of traveling by train and worrying about tickets and things like that. We were in Vienna, and we wanted to get to Salzburg. And we went to the main station, Hauptbahnhof, and went to the ticket office. We asked them how much it cost to go from Vienna to Salzburg. And it was expensive. In fact, it was too expensive. It was something like almost 50 euro each. And, you know, for a 3-hour train ride, that's too much. And we weren't very happy about that. But fortunately, we did a bit of research. There's a great website called seat61.com. A guy that just basically spends a lot of time on trains and has taken all sorts of notes. And on that site, I learned that there's a private rail company that also leaves out of Vienna called Westbahn, and their fares are substantially lower than OBB, which is the national rail company. So we were in Hauptbahnhof, and we had just gotten that quote from the ticket office, and we weren't happy with it at all. We couldn't ask them where their competitor was, but we went to the info desk and asked where Westbahn ticket office is, and he just said something not very clear. He just motioned in a direction. We looked all over that station, could not find an office for Westbahn anywhere. And then we realized there's a train station called Westbahnhof in Vienna, and we figured that must be where they leave from. That must be where their office is. So we hopped on a metro over to Westbahnhof, an U-Bahn actually. And we made our way to that particular train station looking for their office, and we still couldn't find their office because they don't have an office. This is, I guess, one of the ways they keep their costs down. you pay on the train. You pay on the train, but you pay much, much less. You pay less than half the fare on OBB. So learning all this, we realized, okay, what we're going to do is we'll come back tomorrow, the day that we're leaving, and we'll just pay on the train, and it won't be a problem. And here's the train to Budapest, arriving on track 4. It leaves in about 8 minutes, and all these people are, well, they could be going to Vienna. It's also going to Westbahnhof in Vienna. They could be going to Linz, or they could be staying on to the final stop of Budapest. We were in Budapest. We're going to talk about Budapest, have a lot to say about that particular place. But so we got on the train. We picked a train. You don't make reservations. You just leave 38 minutes after the hour all day long. And we just said, okay, we're going to get on the 138. We got on that train. Very nice, very comfortable, as we're always led to expect, you know, on a European train.
We're accustomed to it, definitely.
We are. We're spoiled, I guess, because once we get home, we're going to be complaining about how rough the ride is, how loud it is, how inefficient. You know, it's not that we're jerks. It's basically these are facts we're noticing. It is very smooth, very fast, and very accurate here. And I don't know why we can't do that. I believe we can. We just have to want to. But so we're on the train, and the woman is coming down taking money for the tickets. And I hand her my Visa card, which, by the way, has worked really well this trip because we have finally, this is something we have done that is good. We have adopted the chip system on our credit cards, which we have not had for years. And it's been a major pain when you're trying to pay for things by credit card because we were using the Magstripe system. And it just, a lot of times it didn't work here. But the chip has worked more times than it has not worked. However, this was one of the times that it did not work on the train. We tried to use it, and she said, no, it's not working. And I tried a different credit card, which I didn't want to try because the one I've been using doesn't have a fee for international transactions. So we basically asked if there's any other way we can pay. She asked if we had cash. I did have some cash, but I didn't want to spend, I think it was something like 40 euro. I had a 50 on me. I didn't want to spend 40 of the 50 that I was saving for other things that we'd have to spend cash on. So I said, no, we don't have cash. This should work. I wasn't being, you know, insistent about it. I was trying to help find a solution, as she was as well. She was very nice. I had a feeling she was going to let us ride for free because she asked, oh, you have no cash? You know, I didn't know what was going to happen next. Then we came up with the idea, since the train had Wi-Fi, yes, they have Wi-Fi on their trains.
Free Wi-Fi,
not a big deal. Why don't we hop on the internet and buy a ticket on the internet? These are things that, imagine doing this on either Amtrak or the Long Island Railroad or your local commuter line or something like that. These are concepts that I just don't think we have quite gotten a hold of yet. So you had your laptop open, and what happened from there?
Well, I navigated to the site, and she was there helping us and basically guided us not only to the right way to get a ticket, but also to a winter deal, like a discount for the season, and just walked us through the process. You were there with the card, and eventually it sent me to a page as I was just buying as a guest. I didn't make an account or anything, that had a button to download your PDF. And moments later, I had a PDF.
Wait. There's one thing you left out. You were about to select a certain type of ticket. She's still there. The conductor is still there watching over us. And she kind of helped you out a little bit.
I think I said that. We found a winter discount. And basically that helped reduce the cost to about what we had estimated and what we had found online. And
at her insistence.
Yeah, she insisted this one's cheaper, you know, get that one.
So we actually did better by not being able to buy the ticket the way we planned on buying it online on the train, but going online instead. We saved a few more euro on top of that. I think it was something like, 17, 18 euro each instead of the 50 that they wanted from OBB, or the 20 that we would have paid normally?
Yeah. Yeah, OBB wanted a lot of money. I think they even were quoting us round trip tickets, you know, just to prove you could save €4 that way. I mean, it was just really silly talking to them. This was in stark contrast and worked out. As soon as I got the PDF, then it's like just a matter of her scanning a barcode on my screen.
And that's another thing. I mean, imagine that. She has this little barcode scanner, portable barcode scanner. You're holding up your laptop screen, and I think you magnified it a little bit so it'll be easier to read.
Turn the brightness up.
Yeah, turn the brightness up, and she's able to read the barcode, and bang, we bought a ticket. It's on your computer, and it was pretty awesome. It was, you know, I was never worried that it wasn't going to work out somehow. There we are in a foreign country with no ticket, on a train that's moving, and we figured it out. By the way, we're watching this train to Budapest. There's also a number of people saying goodbye to their friends. And you know, every train also has a...
we have about 5 minutes.
Yes. You sound concerned.
Oh, no, I'm not concerned. I just don't know where I'm going to sit yet.
You're not going to sit anywhere. The train ride is 7 minutes long.
I'm going to stand or sit somewhere I choose.
All right. Well, we'll see how that works out.
How close do you want to cut this?
Well, we have to wait for the Budapest train to leave, which is going to leave in about a minute. It looks like it's 106 now, maybe 107. It leaves at 108. So when that train leaves, our train leaves at 113. We have so much time, it's ridiculous. We're going to walk over there, get on our train. It's going to leave. We'll ride for 7 minutes, and we have 3 minutes in the next station to make our connection to the other train. We know what track it's going to be on. We know it's going to be on time. I am so confident. I'm annoying myself, but that's the way it's going to work. But every train has this little digital board on the outside that tells you the train number. It tells you where it's going. This is very handy information. And once you're on the train, if you have a reserved seat, it'll be marked. It'll be marked. It'll tell you this seat is reserved from this city to this city. So when we were riding from Vienna to Salzburg, we knew that somebody would be sitting in the seat opposite you up until a particular city, and after that it would be free. So we were making plans to switch seats at that particular point in time. All kinds of information.
Turns out she wasn't even supposed to be in that seat, and
another
person came. It's so funny, all the subtleties of...
She knew she wasn't supposed to be there because, I mean, we knew somebody was supposed to be in that seat, and he arrived, so she had to leave. But we knew when he would be leaving, too. So that was kind of cool.
But that's okay because she was gone, and he didn't sit and judge me while I ate my sandwich. He didn't even know I had a sandwich.
That's true. Okay, it's 1:08 now, so the train to Budapest should be leaving almost any second. And once that train starts moving, I'm going to suggest that we start walking over to our train, which leaves in another 5 minutes or so. And that whistle is the indication that this train is ready to leave. It's a simple system, but it works. And also, inside, this is also kind of cool. There's another digital display in the cars, in various points in the cars, where it tells you how fast the train is going, what the next station is, all kinds of other, you know, the name of the train, the number of the train, that kind of thing. Information that turns out to be very, very helpful. I'm going to put my ticket back in my bag, and it's still 1:08. But this train has not yet left to Budapest. I'm sure it will at any second now. There
it's,
it goes.
It's going.
All right,
it's
it started moving. So, yeah, it got 1:08 and 58 seconds, I think, is what it got. So we have exactly 4 minutes to get to our train, which is right at the next platform.
That's enough time they could make up, though. Right? A minute?
Oh, absolutely. And look, there's another train pulling in behind our train, yeah. Way down the platform. So that's kind of neat, too. All right, it's 1:09. We're at our train. We have nothing to worry about. We probably won't get a seat.
The engineer is talking to some guy in there.
Yeah.
Casually having a conversation. He knows he's leaving in a little bit.
Okay, so why don't we sit in this area here, which is for baby carriages and wheelchairs.
And bicycles.
Things with wheels. But since we're getting off in 7 minutes, and I don't see any baby carriages or wheelchairs or bicycles, I see nothing wrong with sitting here. And also because a lot of the other seats are taken. So I'm just going to sit in this seat here. And as we've described, there is a digital display with number of the train, 79030. We're in wagon 2. There's the date, 21 January 2015. It's 1310. Our train leaves in 3 minutes. What? Oh, my God, look at that bathroom. Do you see how big that bathroom is?
Yeah, it's pretty charming.
It's like this room in the middle of the car that is as big as a bathroom in a New York City apartment, easily. It's got a little WC button with green lights all around it, which means that it's available. It's open. We could fit a bunch of... I'm not going to suggest we both go in there, but we could easily fit in there and have a nice conversation in a soundproof environment.
I'm going to go in and wash my hands.
Well, I mean, we how are we going to keep recording if you're in there watching? I have to talk to myself. It would be awfully awkward.
Well, I'm just contemplating it. I mean, why not? It's there. It's an amenity. I've never been on this brand of train. This company, I think, is distinct. We've never done it. And they all have different design. They are, some are open. This one's open all the way through.
Yeah, this is almost like a really nice-looking tram. This is Meridian, I think, is the company. So, yeah, it's a different company. You're right. It's a totally different company that we're riding for the first time. We're in the first car, which also has the engineer. So it's not like a separate locomotive in this particular train.
I think it's made by a company called Stadler.
Okay.
I see a plaque on the door. But so, it's so cool to see the new design, and it's just feels nice.
It does feel nice. And what's also amazing is that we are in a country where we don't speak the language. And there are a lot of countries here in Europe where people are traveling and don't speak the language. That's why you have to have a system like this, which is easy to understand just by numbers, just by consistency. It's, I guess when you have a society where everybody speaks the same language, you get a little lazy. And you don't really think about how easy it is to figure out the system if you don't know all the little nuances.
Intuitive usability, and designing things in ways that are maybe pictorial or in like a logical, visual way, or you know, just accommodate for sort of understanding across languages. It's I think really important when you do have a variety and you need people to simply understand how things work.
By the way, we're supposed to leave in about 30 seconds because there's another clock I can see on the departure board, which is directly in front of us, that has the time to the seconds, 13:12:37 right now. Also next to that is a map of trains. What that is, it's a digital map, so it can change. It gives you a diagram of every train that comes to that particular track throughout the course of a day and where certain cars are. So where is first class, where is the dining car, where is your particular car number? All right, so we're supposed to leave now, 13:13. Well, actually, any time at 13:13, I guess, would be acceptable, like we saw with the Budapest train that kept it to the end of the minute. But, yeah, we should be leaving any second now, I would say. And it's particularly important, obviously, because we have only 3 minutes to make that connection 7 minutes from now. This would never be possible back home, I don't think. We would not have 3 minutes between trains, even if we knew exactly where it was. I'm a little worried because now it's 40 seconds after, but I'm sure we'll start moving before it becomes 13:14.
And as we said, we'll probably make up some time.
Oh. Okay, well, now it is officially 13:14, and we're actually a minute late. So I'm as shocked as you are. But, yeah, I'm sure we'll make up the time, but we might only have 2 minutes to make that connection.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think maybe by half past? Yeah, come on, in the next 5 seconds. We've got to go.
Yeah, it's... It's a little worrisome right now. This is being made a fool of by the Austrian train system here. By the way, I should also point out, we'll be crossing a border almost immediately once we start moving, because Salzburg is almost smack on the border with Germany.
Okay, so they're showing off. Clearly, they want us to make a one-minute transfer and they're going on a full 2 minutes behind.
Wow, this is unprecedented. We might miss our connection now after all this hype that we've been showing off. It's actually going to come down to the wire. I'm still not worried though, because I know exactly what track it's going to be on, and it should be right across the platform. Actually, let's hope so. Oh, for God's sake, people! It's 20 seconds after 13:15 now. And we don't know what's happening because we really should have left now. That first line on the departure board that has our train on it, does it say anything about being late?
Not that I can see. It says yellow. It's got a yellow dot next to the time. We are on the queue. We're very much on the queue. I think this is it, though.
What makes you think this is it?
I don't know. I thought a light went out. Or
I thought I saw a light go out,
any,
too.
Any lurching?
Oh, okay, we're moving. We're moving, but we're almost 3 minutes late. And when you have a three-minute connection at the next stop, well, this will be exciting. I'll say that. I'm going to look at the ticket again to make sure we know what track it is, and we're going to make this work. We have a seven-minute train ride. My bag is buried under all the other bags, so you'll have to carry on for a moment.
Yes. So off we go. Clearing the station here at Salzburg now. Really fascinating, though. This is going to be different. And, what an incredible place. A lot of stuff we didn't see, but it was a good primer. Good.
That's probably him saying he's sorry for being 3 minutes late and for deafening us. Track 5 is what we want when we arrive, if we still have our hearing. There's so much to tell about Salzburg and about the other places we've been, which I want to get to, but I think that's a whole other discussion, because we've been, the last show we did, I think we were in Bratislava riding on a tram. We were talking about various things we had done, I think, up through Dresden.
I feel it's a good introduction, both to Vienna from the perspective of what we saw in Vienna and also here in Salzburg. And we'll definitely be back, I'm sure, in the future.
What do you think of Bratislava?
I liked it. It was definitely manageable. I think we got familiar with it. Interesting the amount of like tech workers there and the culture of really interesting, I don't know, a bit gritty. I think we talked about that. Definitely had its quirks. Nothing like what I thought it would be, though. I thought maybe it would be less modern or somehow different from the, you know, lifestyle and ways we're used to in big cities back home or in even like western parts of Europe. But overall, it was interesting. I mean, we got a grip of like the layout. It was, like you said, small, manageable. The people were pretty friendly overall. We managed to, I don't know, feel welcome, and we didn't feel like we were being run over, but yeah, it was interesting. Very friendly and had its different pace. It was less gritty, I think, than Budapest.
Budapest was the place we went to afterwards. And I like Bratislava. I thought it was really a cool place. Things are quite affordable. We spent a lot of time walking, but we also used the transit system quite a bit by getting a day pass that lasted for a couple of days. Budapest, though, I really enjoyed. I think about the pace of Budapest that intrigues me. For one thing, if you're riding an escalator, it's going double the speed of any escalator we've been on, I think. Escalators into the metro, just they go so incredibly fast. I like that. I like that a lot. It just seems to be a very bustling town, much bigger, too. We spent a lot of time exploring there and found some really, really good places for food and drink and things like that were incredibly affordable. I mean, we went to one place that we just had a bottle of wine and we had amazing appetizers and entrees and even dessert. And the whole check for both of us was something like 40 euro, which is about, I guess, $45 US, maybe a little more. So that was incredible, being able to do things like that. Also finding places to stay. We were spending something like $35 for a hotel, like a decent hotel, which I thought was pretty cool. By the way, we are supposed to have arrived by now. It's 13:20, so that's the time we're supposed to arrive in Freelesing. So if we are 3 minutes late, well, that's the time our next train leaves. But it'll be leaving from track 5. We arrive on track 4. Okay, so if you look there, there's another screen that tells you the actual time we'll be arriving. The plan is 13:20. Actual time is 13:22. So we will arrive 1 minute before the other train leaves. I imagine that's the time they factor in, so that you have just enough time. Isn't that cool? That screen just went on and went off just to tell us that information. It's a whole other screen just to tell you what time you'll be arriving at every station along the route. Why do we have things like that? Why don't we have nice computer screens inside trains that just silently tell you the information that's important?
Because I think the people that run those systems are overwhelmed, and they don't have the skill in actually designing a full integrated system. They're just, you know, falling over themselves to maintain what system they barely have.
Oh. What nice music.
Next
I'd definitely say Budapest was expensive.
Would you say... Oh, expansive, not expensive.
Yeah, expansive. Big. A lot of history. Huge buildings. Definitely feels like many empires have risen and fallen there.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, you go to these places and there's a massive castle up on top of a mountain staring down, or huge statues or things like that, and it's hard to get used to. It really is. You know, Kyle, I can't help but notice that you're grabbing your bag and thinking that we have to race. We can relax. We have 1 minute.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to make it. No, not a problem. What are you thinking?
I'll wash my hands now.
Yeah, well, don't do that. That's probably our train right across the track there. We're pulling into Freelesing or whatever this place is called. I hope that's our train was an awfully short train. It was only 2 cars long. Okay, and now the door's not opening. Really need that door to open. Okay, now we're getting out. Can we verify that's track 5? Is that track 5? Yes,
yes.
That is our train. We don't have to run like we're a couple of refugees trying to escape.
I wave to the conductor.
Okay, that means he'll keep the train for us. Now, yeah. Let's get on. And we are on an even smaller train now. But I should point out, Kyle, you're walking into first class. Keep going, though.
Low class.
Well, this is second class that we're in right now, but it's a small second class. Now, this might also be second class, but I'm not sure. Let's put our bags down here. I'll check to see if this is second class. Okay, I'm going out into the foyer now. Our train is moving, by the way. I'm not sure if we're in second class or not. All right. I think this is second class, but we'll find out for sure. So, not a problem. Here we are on the second train. We're already picking up a good pace. Nothing to worry about. 1 minute connection. Piece of cake.
Yeah. Welcome in Austria.
We're going to pick this up a little later on. We have 2 hours on this train. About 2 hours, I think. And then we have another connection. For that one, we have a 10-minute connection time. So that should be no problem at all. I'm kind of surprised how small this train is. It's like a little two-car train.
Im Namen der Südostbayernbahn wünschen wir Ihnen eine angenehme Reise.
So maybe we'll pick this up as this train comes to an end and we make the next connection.
Yeah, and we can talk about the air quality in Budapest, because I've got lots to say about that.
I do too, and It's something that is worth focusing on for sure. But we'll pick it up in Budapest while we're on the train into Germany. Are we in Germany?
I'm not sure. Maybe. I mean, I heard it was really close from some of the people we talked to. They'd, like, bicycle there over the border, you know, 40 minutes, no problem.
Yeah, it was 10 kilometers away. I think we went 10 kilometers. So we're probably in Germany now. But usually my phone welcomes me when I go to another country. So we'll see if my phone... Can you read the license plates?
D.
You were able to see a D that quickly? Well, that could also mean somebody from Germany drove their car into Austria. But I agree. I think this is Germany.
Don't let me have that, will you?
No, well, it's
you
kind
to be
of...
certain.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Close the window, please. Thank you. That's actually better for us because we don't hear as much sound. Okay, so we're going to sign off now. But as we speed our way into Germany, back into Germany, on this little tiny train. Wow. A huge green field, miles wide, and you saw a cat in the middle of it.
Yeah, he was like an orange, gold-colored cat with long hair.
Who has the whole world at his fingertips, apparently, can do anything he wants.
Can you imagine how much fun he's having? She... It?
Yeah. Well, we're going to see all kinds of cool things, I'm sure, as we ride this little tiny train through Germany. Can you feel it?
Diese Sinnlosschlagzeilen haben wir gerade gefunden. Das Dschungelcamp startet bald. Angeblich bekommen die Stars dieses Jahr nicht mehr als 100.000 Euro.
Hallo, na, das reicht aber auch dafür, dass sie zwei Wochen lang nur unter Kakerlakenkacke rumsitzen und nichts machen.
Lecker. Die meisten Sachsen stört zu viel Parfüm.
Das ist aber so ein bisschen aufdringlich. Bei dir wäre ich allerdings froh, wenn du ab und an wenigstens mal Parfüm tragen würdest.
Achso, und hier. Feuer im Fitnessstudio. Ah, zum Glück ist keiner zu Schaden gekommen hier, ne?
Da wurden wohl zu viele Kalorien verbrannt, wa? Ja, Freunde, vielen Dank.
Your pleasures catching my eye. If I jump once, then I never think twice. But your temptation's making me stay another night.
my senses, only lie to me, lie to me. I don't know how it feels so right to me, right to me. I gotta check myself.
Yes, yes, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Steinberg. It is, let's see, 7.02 p.m. on a Tuesday night. And, yeah, I'm going to be talking to Kyle Evans in just a few moments from the great, great band Echo Bloom about the new release, Red, and plus tons of other strange and beautiful music. Stay tuned. WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be right back.
gotta do the best we can. We will ride with me. Yeah.
promised her that it would be alright. Offering to get me Caroline.
Yeah, Echo Bloom. In just a few moments, we'll be talking to Echo Bloom's chief songwriter and lead singer, Kyle Evans. But right now, here's Evangeline. Just a few moments from now, we'll be talking to Kyle.
Every day.